How is it going? Thank you for checking in. And today we're going off the beaten path a little bit. We talk music and movies and sports so much here. But May is National Mental Health Awareness Month. I wanted to bring on an expert on the subject to deal with the fact that we're all dealing with stuff. We're not always feeling awesome. And how to cope without sitting on a doctor's couch and say, here's your meds, and get over it, right? So if one person benefits, then this is definitely a win podcast. So let me bring in a good friend, holistic coach, and lifestyle coach, Yareli Quintana. I'm lucky to be talking to Yareli Quintana, holistic health and lifestyle coach. So how messed up is your life?
Oh.
that's not a good opening line. I could have done better as an opener.
Life is grand.
Well, we're talking about people whose life isn't grand. That's why I wanted to kind of hit you with that, you know, curveball.
There you go.
This is Mental Health Month or Mental Health Awareness Month, and it's been around since 1949, and I barely have heard of it.
Yeah, it's really something that we need to talk more about, more openly about, and there's an absolute stigma around mental health that I feel like needs to start to make its way out. We need to feel more confident in these conversations and bring more open-heartedness and compassion into them so that we can approach it with more ease and love, I would say.
I think we feel badly that we're not feeling good, right? I mean, we see all of this success in the world on TV with celebrities or our friends that have more money than us or better jobs or better cars or a better spouse, and we can't handle it and we don't know how to deal with it.
Right. I think that there's a social overwhelm when it comes to those pieces of our lives. Social media has been a very big contributor to that because, you know, we're constantly hanging on to our mini computers in our pocket and glancing at what everyone else is doing. And then we have this fear of either being inadequate or, you know, low self-esteem that comes in, ruminating, you know, the thoughts that just kind of take over our minds. And it's becoming a very, very serious problem in something so simple like social media, for example. One of the many, many examples that can lead us to feel pretty bad about ourselves.
And that's something that we need to know right now is not reality. I mean, people aren't putting in the worst details of their lives, or they're putting out their best vacations and their best cars and their most attractive pictures. So we're not getting an accurate perspective of who we really are, because I know I do the same thing.
You're absolutely right. And I think that's something that's fairly new, believe it or not. I don't think that everyone understands that just yet, especially those who are maybe a little bit more impressionable, like our youth. I don't think that they fully understand that many of these feeds or people that they follow, these are curated to provoke an emotion, to showcase a specific lifestyle, even to sell a specific product. So many people are not understanding that behind all of this is hard work, is trials and tribulations, is past failures, is a lot of what real life looks like. But they certainly aren't putting those moments out there.
Yeah, I mean, even your own friends, you don't know what's going on behind closed doors, and you're not going to see that on social media.
That's very true. That's an excellent point. And, you know, some of the people that I work with as a coach, for example, have been masters at hiding the truth from the closest to them. So I'm talking about hiding it from parents, hiding it from spouses, best friends, significant others, even like their own teachers growing up. They've been masters at holding back and doing the silent suffering in what's really going on in their lives.
Well, what about some of these celebrities, Yareli, that come out and they admit, you think they've got everything. They've got the looks and the money and the fame. So the Demi Lovatos of the world, Catherine Zeta-Jones. There was an article in Us last month that had all these celebrities that came clean. Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones, Janet Jackson, Kanye West, Justin Bieber. They've all admitted that, you know what, our life is not what it's cracked up to be, and we've got our own issues.
Right. And I think that's a wonderful first step, especially like I mentioned earlier to the impressionable youth, to just, you know, to be as real and raw as one feels comfortable being. I think that that's an excellent first step. I think that when you have a platform, whether it's in music or whether it's, you know, something bigger or something in, you know, maybe you have a podcast, maybe you are, you know, a movie star, whatever your platform is, if you can take a moment to utilize that platform in a more positive way, to help anyone, just one person even, I think that that's an incredibly courageous step forward. I think we need to see more of that. I think it's great. What a little bit of what I haven't seen just yet is that kind of step forward kind of make its way to, I would say, like converting the openness at the local level. So where it's actually bringing more people out to say, I also have XYZ, or I'm also suffering in what, you know, whatever way, or dealing with whatever illness or issue. I think that it's great to bring awareness, but I think there's so much more work to be done at the local level to make mental health something that we can approach kind of with grace and kindness.
There's a study that came out that said 75% of the people feel afraid they'll be punished for taking a day off for mental health. I mean, we're perceived as weak by coming clean about this stuff, right?
Well, and that's interesting because I've recently seen more employers encouraging mental health days, which I think is a beautiful step forward. But I completely understand that traditionally speaking, and I'm talking about like traditionally in the US, we're not used to talking about the things that are hurting us, the things that maybe make us more vulnerable. We are masking what we are perceiving to be weak in order to carry some sort of social clout or in order to, you know, appear stronger, smarter, you know, whatever it is. And I think that the real leadership in the workplace is, you know, is supposed to, and I would say is responsible for bringing this stigma out, for saying, you know, it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to take days off. You're not perceived as weak. You're perceived as actually, in my eyes, more courageous, because it takes so much vulnerability and self-knowledge and self-awareness to stand fully and say, I need help. And then, you know, I'm a firm believer that that's the first step to a new life, to a new beginning. So I applaud the employers who are coming forward and saying, we're going to add this to our normal kind of, you know, benefits package, take X days off or take as many as you need. I think that that's a very beautiful kind of way that we can step forward and make better in this world.
Are you talking about just a day off to clear your head or a day off to see a therapist?
Both. I think that both are so important. You know, some people have been visiting, you know, whether it's traditional therapy or doing some sort of holistic type of modality, you know, trying whatever it is in their lives. And it's been working. And whatever it is that works for them, wonderful. And if they need a day off to just be silent in meditation, I think that that's a wonderful thing, not only for the mind, but for the body, for the stress levels. There's so much that we can gain from simply saying, I've had too much and I need to pull it back. And then, of course, we know that when we do that, when we take care of our minds and bodies, that we are more productive, we are more effective at work, we are more open-hearted in our relationships. So there's only benefit to be gained. It's only a step forward from there.
Oh, so many tools like meditation, which is going to release, you know, the chemicals like dopamine and serotonin, all these endorphins to just help change your mental state.
Right. Absolutely. And meditation is a huge one. there have been so many studies around meditation, and I'm also certified meditation teacher, and there are hundreds, if not thousands, of different styles of meditation. And I can tell you that in the programs that I have seen, the ones that I have implemented, I started a program in schools called Mindfulness in the Classroom. It teaches K through 12 students, an 8-week curriculum that I developed to be an all-inclusive holistic health program. Programs like that, that give students a tool, a tangible tool to work on in the classroom, we see tremendous results. We've seen things like anxiety symptoms go down. We've seen depression symptoms go down. We've seen improved clarity, improved compassion, more participation. I've had students tell me that it's improved their self-esteem dramatically, giving them more purposeful life in their eyes. The things that I've seen also documented have included things like doing better on test scores, improving sleep, improving their immune system. It's really tremendous what something like meditation, which some of us aren't so familiar with the different styles of meditation, so we think, oh, that, you know, that's just kind of sitting there in silence and it doesn't really work or whatever. But if we took the time to just do a little bit of research, you'll find so many major universities, institutions globally that support different styles of meditation as an actual aid, if not protocol, to help with mental health. And I'm a huge advocate for meditation. It's honestly the tool that changed my life, that changed my entire career path. And so that's the one that I stand by wholeheartedly, which is why I started Mindfulness in the Classroom in the first place, was I saw the benefits of this. And I said, we need this in the hands of our youth and our educators.
So you really, these kids are taking time out during the class to meditate?
Yes, absolutely. So the way that we developed the program is I created 8 weeks. And in that 8 weeks, we have every week is a new practice. So we go through mindful breathing techniques. We talk about mindful eating. We talk about compassion cultivation. We work on mindful communication, mindful learning, understanding the way that the brain and the body connect, and how we see direct biological, psychological influences through this practice. And the students as young as kindergarten are doing this practice. And I'll go into the classroom for 20 minutes. Sometimes it's 30 minutes. And I do a mindfulness practice with them, so actual breathing exercises. And then after that, I introduce them to an activity. And that activity puts that exercise in motion. So it's experiential in the moment. And then after that, I give them a few minutes to jot down something that they're grateful for, because gratitude is also a very powerful tool in healing. And so they open up a gratitude journal and they write down something they're grateful for. And the kids, if there's extra time, we always encourage them to share what they've learned. And the responses are absolutely beautiful. What we've seen has been transformational, truly, not only for the students, but also for the educators.
You see, where we are as a country, we envy this 1%, but really in America, we're the 1% when you look at the entire world. So you can always find things to be grateful for, that you have a home, you have food, you have clothing, when there are so many people around the world that don't have it. At least if you have that kind of frame of reference, you can be more grateful and be more positive to start your day.
Right. And it's, you know, it can really start with something very simple. Something like a gratitude journal is so easy to implement. And it doesn't always have to be, you know, something in a journal. You can, you know, one of the things that I've kind of shared with some of my clients is, if that's not your thing, that's okay. Let's find a different way to show gratitude. And for some, what works is just getting thank you cards out. So sending spontaneous thank you cards to friends, family, you know, people that have done work with them, whatever it is, just saying thank you. And Another exercise that's kind of fun, especially for kids, is having a discussion at the table. So kind of looking at what's on the plate and saying, you know, if they're eating a salad, maybe saying, thank you, mom, for making the salad, or thank you, dad, for helping, you know, make the salad. And then going down the line, you know, thank you, farmer, for growing, you know, the produce. And thank you, person at the cash register, for selling us the produce. And it's a really fun kind of game. But kids can learn gratitude at a very, very young age. And as we know, it's these habits that can be just really, that can help us tremendously when we are, you know, find ourselves down the line with bigger mental health issues.
You were just talking, you know, nutrition, and obviously, you know, being healthy helps our mind as well. Now, Burger King has partnered with these folks with Mental Health Awareness Month, and they have these "No One Is Happy All the Time" meals. Mm-hmm. So you have your DGAF meal, a pissed meal, blue meal, salty meal, yes meal, as a way to kind of acknowledge, you know what, I'm not awesome, and I'm going to have this meal and dig it.
Yeah. I saw that, and it's very interesting to me. You know, I would give Burger King a high five for kind of for stepping outside of the box and bringing attention to mental health in this way. But there's a very large connection in how food affects mood. And that within itself can be an entire podcast. But yep. Truly that there the food that we eat in the U.S., is what we call the standard American diet, lacks nutritional density in such a way that studies have shown that it actually does affect our mood. And when we take time to improve our diets, it can help fully relieve symptoms of depression in some cases, anxiety in some cases, help with recovery, improve inflammation. I mean, the list goes on in how it can really help in getting the accurate amount of nutrients and how this can improve, you know, the microbiome for existence, which is where most of these neurotransmitters are made that communicate with the brain that then tell our brains, you know, okay, we're now happy or we've lowered our inflammation. So food and mood is very, very connected, and they're very interesting links in more in newer research that show how, you know, gut flora is influenced by food and how that directly links to anxiety, depression, and there's so much more that we can do. So maybe a point for Burger King for bringing it yeah. forward, but I would love to have a conversation with them about their menu as a whole.
Yeah. You know, we like the message, but we're not too fond of the messenger.
Yeah.
I've heard of kids help their ADD by getting rid of stuff like frozen pizza instead of, you know, being stuck on Ritalin, just cleaning up your diet and being healthier.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I always caution in this area because I think it's important that families understand and adults. I mean, adults have ADHD as well. I think that it's important that we all kind of understand that there can be a multidimensional protocol. There can be, you know, psychology, psychiatry, holistic health, a personal trainer, you know, art, you know, whatever your protocol looks like to make you feel better, I think is great. But the ones that have to be there, in my opinion, are good food. So getting rid of that frozen pizza and maybe making, if pizza's your thing, maybe making it at home where you know where the ingredients are coming from and you're not getting any processed foods or fillers. And so I think food nutrition is number one. I would say that exercise is another one, non-negotiable. And I would say some time in meditation or a contemplative type of practice that brings down the wandering mind and helps us see kind of, you know, more of what's going on the inside, more of our thoughts, feelings, self-compassion, that sort of work. So I think those things are necessary, whether it's ADHD, depression, whether it's bipolar, PTSD. I think that those are necessary, even if we're working with a psychiatrist or a psychologist.
Are we over-medicated in that area?
I would say absolutely. And I think that, you know, I believe in medicine. It's not that I don't believe in medicine, but I think that we've become a society that goes to medication first and then holistic modalities way, way, way down the line. And I think that there's this unfortunate kind of belief around holistic health modalities. A lot of people that I've talked to, even in my own practice, kind of aren't as open to hear how natural ways of, you know, improving our lifestyle and health can contribute to living more fulfilling lives, more productive lives. And I'm not sure why that is. So, you know, in such a modern time, I think that we could do a lot more in educating the public and bringing forward more meaningful and conscious conversations around how both medicine and holistic health can coexist and support one another. But to be honest, it's very sad to me because it's the people who are suffering. Those who are over-medicated have a laundry list of symptoms that sometimes make it so much worse. And, you know, some of the medications aren't designed for long-term use. So I think that we should kind of flip the script here, go to the holistic and more natural modalities first, and then when necessary, intervene with medicine.
Nice. And there's all kinds of options. This year's theme is hashtag for mind, for body. So we've covered things like the meditation and the food, things like animal companionship, spirituality, mm-hmm. religion, humor, things like dancing and recreation, all kinds of other options before we get to the meds.
Yes, absolutely. You know, something as simple as implementing an omega-3 supplement, something like, you know, better sleep or building habits that help you get to sleep at a regular time, exercise, as I said earlier, sunshine, my goodness, sunshine is so uplifting, you know, just being there not only helps us because we're absorbing our vitamin D, but truly it is just, it puts a smile on your face when you can be out and active in the sun. So taking advantage of that daylight is so important. But yeah, social connections of whatever kind. I mean, I've seen things like goat yoga or, you know, hashtag puppy love and those kinds of things to heal people's hearts. Fine. If that's what makes you happy, let's do it. But let's be mindful. Let's proceed with a goal of healing and education and open conversation and eliminate that stigma as much as possible.
Well, I hear that phrase, you know, I'm working on myself, you know, I'm fixing my life, but you have to have other people involved, you know, to make it work. And one of the studies I just read before I started talking to you is that being alone can cause the same amount of damage as smoking 15 cigarettes a day and more dangerous than obesity.
Yeah, it's very sad. It's sad to think that people feel alone, even in times when they're surrounded by loved ones. And so that's something that's going on inside, right? And so we, you know, as we talk about mental health and opening up these conversations, I think it's important to not only, you know, if you're alive and well and fortunate to not suffer in some way, to open up conversations in a confident and kind of gentle way and offer compassion. You know, the number one kind of understanding about compassion is that it's non-judgmental and it's our heart's response to suffering. And so if we just lead life with a little bit more compassion for others and compassion for ourselves and our communities, I think that we can offer up a lot of help. Things like simply listening, you know, listening to whether a partner or a friend and just being present as they may, you know, might open up. Asking questions, things like that are so important. I think it's all kind of supportive behavior. It breaks my heart to think that some people are lonely even when they're surrounded by loved ones and not finding that closeness that they need.
How do you combat the being outdoors and being in the sunshine in a place like Seattle where there's so little of it?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we do we do hear that all the time. And being in Seattle, I mean, right now, it's like a gorgeous evening out. But there are so many other things that we can do, right? So we can get outdoors and we can do some exercise, or we can join a group. There's so many wonderful workout groups. We can join a yoga class. We can spend time with our loved ones. We can look at things like meditation, as I said, more introspective kind of practices. Journaling is a beautiful thing that you can do. And then I think it's just kind of investing in ourselves. Sometimes we're not, you know, when we're feeling overwhelmed or we're run down by these thoughts that are crippling in some cases, or these behavioral traits that kind of take over our lives, we can always sit and calm and quiet with a professional. So I'm a big advocate of just reaching out. If you can muster up the courage to just say, I want to talk, or this is what help looks like for me. I'm hard pressed to find someone who's not willing to at minimum listen, you know? So there, I think that there's a lot that we can do. Finding our passions is very important. And not letting, you know, not comparing ourselves to others. So wherever you are is okay. It's not a competition. We all have our own paths and we're all here for a very specific purpose. So understanding what calls your heart, I think, is very, very important. And, you know, if the sun's not out that day, then let's go to our yoga class, or let's find, you know, our workout group, or let's find a friend to talk to, or let's, you know, go follow our passion, whatever it might be. But let's not sit and feel hopeless in a time where I think that so many are willing to help.
Invariably, when you get into that therapy session and you start digging deep and deep, you're going to get back to some childhood stuff, and you've got that needle in the record that's just kind of grooved in there over and over. So it just becomes a part of who you are. And eventually you have to reprogram or get rid of that voice that tells you, you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, you're not good looking enough. And you take these steps in your life to make these changes, but you still hear that voice.
Yes, absolutely true. Is that voice can be crippling and scary. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that most issues that kind of paralyze us in that way emotionally are stemming from fear, and something that we were afraid to revisit, learn, uncover, or maybe just an issue that we're afraid of in general. And I think that it's very important to kind of work with a professional to uncover those fears at your pace, whatever your pace looks like. But I think that there's so much that we can do to switch that frame of thinking, to approach whether, you know, whatever it is that has, you know, scared us or whatever it is that we're kind of held back by, with a little bit of love and self-compassion, looking at, you know, something like I had a client that I worked with before, a very young woman, professional, and one of her fears was getting back in the workplace after having her baby. And she was just afraid that she had missed out on so much. And she was going through a lot of self-judgment and self-criticism. And we started to just kind of rephrase the conversation into one that was a little bit more positive. So instead of letting her kind of sit in those thoughts, we just started to work on affirmative kind of beliefs, things that she was supportive of. And you wouldn't believe the kind of transformation that you can do by simply shifting language, by approaching something with a more loving heart. Really just opens us up to believing in ourselves in a way that sometimes isn't there when we're in our darkest days.
And these wounds that we have, you know, a lot of times we'll think it's about us, but really it's about the other person. It's their own wounding, and they just happen to take it out on you. It's not a reflective of where we are. It's a reflection of where they are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is one of the things, you know, Dave, that I think mindfulness helps a lot with, is giving us this kind of the space between our thought and the reaction. So if we're taking in information that maybe hurt us in whatever way, whether it was, you know, maybe an insult that we've received, or maybe we've been offended in some way, instead of being a culture that constantly is reactive, mindfulness helps us pause and open our hearts up just a little bit, open our minds up just a little bit, so that we can respond in a more caring and compassionate way. So in a relationship, this can be something as simple as, you know, maybe repeating what you've just heard. You know, I heard you say that XYZ, and are you saying this because, you know, and giving your reason, or what I believe is coming is your fear of. So just having a very open-hearted kind of conversation. In relationships, I don't think that, you know, any relationship is perfect. So if you're with someone or in a household where you're experiencing kind of this backlash, I think mindfulness would be extremely beneficial to kind of help you pause and feel the compassion and feel kind of what's happening in the moment and help the non-reactive kind of habit that we've developed as a society. And then that way, maybe we create a little bit more space and time and understanding so that there's room for growth.
You described the great technique of dialogue with relationships. When you say something to me and then I repeat it back to you, because that shows I'm hearing you since I'm able to say it back, and then you can explain yourself, you know, is there anything more, Ureli? Then you can add on to it, and it really creates a great, you know, chemistry and rapport with two people. And that certainly can help with loneliness or being anxious, depressed, or whatever.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I think that's so, so important. And, you know, and in relationships, as much as it is, you know, if we're leaders of an institution or if we're teachers or business owners and we're talking to our employees, if something comes up that is, you know, teetering on that emotional line, not being afraid to have an open-hearted conversation and to say, what I'm hearing you say is, or, you know, what I'm experiencing in this moment is, I'm having, you know, feelings of whatever it may be, anxiety, fear, I'm feeling rejected, whatever it might be, and not being afraid to kind of open ourselves up. I think we need to have more practice in that, certainly, but I think we need to do the work to understand that, you know, this is, I think, something we all experience, and not being so afraid to approach it. You know, I've certainly had feelings and symptoms of anxious thoughts before. I've certainly been reactive in conversations. I've, you know, allowed my judgment to be clouded by emotion before. And so just, you know, even if we do respond in that way, kind of taking it back and being more mindful and saying, you know, at that moment, this is how I was feeling, or in this moment, this is how I was feeling. That's why I reacted in that way. You know, I'm going to try this again. And just having, you know, an open mind. Of course, that begins with non-judgment too.
What were some of the things that were your own personal hangups before you decided to get into this line of work? Back when you were troubled and messed up and scarred?
Yeah. So, you know, what's sad is that I had... I think what a lot of young women at my age, in my late teens, early 20s, kind of go through, which is this kind of overwhelming fear and sense of lack of self-esteem and maybe over comparing yourself to others. I had to find it in myself and through my yoga and meditation practice to just kind of work on me and do what worked for me. I'm fortunate enough that I've not only been able to study those tools and use them in my own life, but then, you know, teach them today, teaching Kundalini yoga, teaching different styles of meditation and talking about the connections between food and mood and, you know, overall lifestyle and health. I feel like I've been very fortunate that I've taken kind of those troubling days and then learned from them in such a way that inspired me to share those messages with others. Today, that's kind of what drives me is that, you know, I wish I had a meditation practice in my school. I know how much that would have helped me. So that's why I started mindfulness in the classroom. I work with young women today because I know how difficult it is to make the transition from working or from living with, you know, parents and being dependent to being independent and trying to figure it all out amongst, you know, all of the worldly pressures that we feel all the time. So I strive to connect in those ways where I've experienced that myself. Everybody kind of has their own time and schedule for learning. So just being patient with yourself, I think, is very important. And kind of just taking it a day at a time. There's always light at the end of the tunnel. So just feeling like you're not alone and being open-minded, I think, is very important.
I have seen a couple women I know in a Kundalini class at the end really break down because it's an emotional experience. Now, for me, it's just hard to hold my arms that long and chant, so I'm cramping up. So it's more emotional in a different reason. My body hurts, but it really is a spiritual cleansing.
It absolutely is. And, you know, not only spiritually is it a beautiful practice that really opens you up and helps you kind of hone in on the energy that lives within you, but there have been so many studies in Kundalini yoga, many of them coming out of UCSD, that are directly referencing how Kundalini yoga has helped mental health issues, how Kundalini yoga has helped in longevity, in issues of you know, the gut microbiome, in so many other physical ways, biological ways, how it helps with stability and clarity. So there's a lot of actual documentation and study that shows that these breathing techniques that we do in Kundalini, the different eye postures, so whether you're looking at the third eye or looking at the tip of the nose during meditation, or the different mantras and mudras, the different hand movements, and then of course the physical body practice, right, actually changes the body, and it actually changes the way that we then deal with whatever our ailments are. So it's a very, very powerful practice, and one that goes back so many years. I think it's documented as 1,000 years BC is the first time it was like in writing in the ancient Vedic texts. So, I mean, this is, you know, it's considered to be a technology, as yogis used to see it and call it, and still do today, quite frankly. But it's a very, very powerful practice. So I highly recommend it to everyone. I constantly say, you know, whether you're battling an addiction, or whether you're somebody that has anxiety or depression, or another area that it's been tremendous benefit is in those who suffer from PTSD. So Kundalini has been documented as being an incredible source of healing. So I always recommend it.
You've done Bikram too, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah. And I still do. I love the heat. I'm a big, believer in moving meditation, and being in a hot room, doing the 26 postures and 2 breathing exercises that Bikram gives you is an incredibly personal practice for me, where I challenge myself, I challenge my body. And for me, I'm able to escape my thoughts completely in a way that just puts me in the room and gets me very in touch with my body.
Yeah, one of my favorite instructors uses the term healing. You know, so it's not there for the workout, but you're actually healing your body by getting yourself in some of these different postures, whether you're massaging your colon, or you're stretching out your hamstring, opening up your shoulders. And it's as much of a healing as it is a workout.
Absolutely. There's a lot of documentation around Bikram yoga as well, and especially in helping with meditation and helping with arthritis. I've seen so many people gain tremendous benefits from, you know, whatever physical ailments they might have had, whether it was having joint pain or hip pain, even in recovery of cancers and recovery of broken limbs. It's been quite incredible to see how a practice can really kind of stimulate the body in such a way that it really enhances healing.
You know, hopefully we can do all this stuff without meds, but the bottom line, you know, there are some medications that help, especially when you deal with things like bipolar, and some folks refuse to take them. Right? I mean, this is your little pill that will help you feel right, feel normal, feel productive, be good, and then you won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
What's
mm-hmm.
that about?
You know, I think that a lot of people, I've I've spoken with some of my clients who actually do take bipolar medication, and what happens in their cases is that they just don't like the side effects. They don't like the extras. And that's one of the things that is, you know, it's difficult to approach because, like I said before, I'm not against medicine, but there are side effects that come with medication. And sometimes when you read all of the side effects, you are even more scared to take the medication. So that's why I'm a firm believer in approaching whatever it is with holistic modalities or some sort of protocol that engages and really incorporates kind of like an integrative approach between your physician, your medical doctors, and then your psychotherapist or your psychiatrist and your holistic health coach, so that everyone can be on the same page working towards a common goal. And that way you feel like you have a team and you're not so overwhelmed, because those side effects are scary.
I just thought about this. It just popped in my head. Is medicinal marijuana part of any of this holistic approach?
You know, I think that the conversation is definitely widening up. I've seen a lot of more recent conversations around the use of CBD, for example. We know that CBD is and medicinal marijuana, you know, depending on whether you're using one isolated compound or kind of opening it up to the entire plant. And the plant, of course, you know, needless to say, it has the THC, so giving you that high effect. But when you isolate the compounds and make it more of a CBD experience, we know that it has helped with inflammation in cases that have been reported and documented. Of course, this is all kind of early. But we also know that in heavier cases, there are now pharmaceutical companies who, of course, want to take over and create drugs utilizing the marijuana plant. So, you know, things like dealing with and helping patients that have epilepsy. So I think that we're going to see that pretty quickly. And there's definitely, you know, right now we joke that it's kind of like the wild, wild west out here, because you see marijuana everywhere, and you see, you know, the CBD compounds everywhere and used for just about everything from, you know, having it in our wellness shots to our coffees, and then just using tinctures kind of directly in the mouth. But whatever it is, I think it's just kind of, you know, we're in an experimentation phase. There's probably going to be a lot of regulation around it pretty soon. And I think we're just kind of out to see what happens. But for those patients that I know that use it, I'm 100% in support of it, because what, you know, I don't need a medical study to tell me that it's working for someone. If it works for you and you feel good and you're finding happiness and fulfillment and a better life out of it, then who am I or anyone else? Like, how do we have the arrogance to come in and say, no, that's false? You know, I believe in healing as a whole. And, you know, even the placebo is kind of, you know, one of those things that we talk about as being healing also. So whatever works for you, let's do it. Let's just get you healthy and happy and feeling more fulfilled.
What are the words that are on your fiance's t-shirt? Because that's why I thought of this topic. I saw Strawberry's post on Instagram, and he was wearing this shirt that mentioned mental health. And it was something like, it's okay that I'm not okay.
Yes. Yes. And that's a wonderful organization. Have Hope is all about promoting these conversations and you know, letting youth know and really everyone know that you're not alone, and that not being okay is all right, and to not be afraid to ask for help. So it's something that we're very passionate about. Unfortunately, we lost a very close friend to suicide. And for us, it's something that we want to educate others about. And we want to really promote this idea and this belief that if you need help, of whatever kind. You don't have to be suicidal. You don't have to have a diagnosis. But if you need help, don't be afraid to ask for it. It's those who ask for it who are the strong. So we really want to get that out there.
There's a book I just saw a title of when I addressed the subject. It's called It's Okay That You're Not Okay by Megan Devine. And it deals with the loss and really that sometimes life sucks, that Just get over it, Yareli. Just get over it. Get through it. You know what? It's not that easy, but just how to somehow cope and make it a part of you that doesn't paralyze you, somehow empowers you.
Absolutely. And, you know, and that's why it's important to just keep in mind that everybody kind of moves at their own pace. So whatever society's standard it is for, you know, rehabilitation or coping or, you know, getting better of whatever kind, kind of we got to set that aside because everybody is dealing with something different. And everybody was brought up in a different way. For some people, the reason that they're not asking for help or why their progress might be a little bit or they might be, you know, in a slower kind of progression might be cultural, you know, because maybe they don't have the people right away that they can go to talk to. It might be a cultural thing. It might be that they don't have the resources to see a doctor. Maybe they don't have the resources to work with a health coach. So just understanding that everyone is kind of on their own schedule and allowing that to be whatever it looks like.
Why is the subject matter so personal to you? I know you made a career change not too long ago. In fact, I met you when you were in a different profession. Now you're, quote, holistic health and lifestyle coach. What about that change?
Yeah, so, you know, what really triggered me was I've always practiced yoga and meditation, and that was a really big deal for me. But I got to a point where in my previous work, I was doing media marketing, public relations as consulting, working with major brands and working for myself for the most part. And I found that I kind of got stuck in the habit, like every other you know, entrepreneur probably, where sometimes we just forget how many hours we've worked. You know, we end up working ourselves to a place of unhealthy, you know, thoughts and unhealthy kind of behavior. And so I found myself kind of overwhelmed. And then that started to manifest physically for me. So I started to feel fatigue. I started to feel, I would say a lot of anxiety around my work. And this is a career I had for, you know, 12 years. So why it was showing up at that point, I don't know. But I think that in just being self-aware, thanks to the meditation and thanks to the yoga that I was practicing, I think that that was really what opened my eyes to the possibility that I can change it. And so I started to kind of go down this deep dive of studying how these practices that I was already incorporating in my life might be able to help me a little bit more. And, you know, if I was doing the right ones to help me with at that time, my fatigue, my stomach problems and things like that. And in that deep dive, I discovered an endless amount of research, and I enrolled myself in some programs to really get, a well-rounded approach so that I could really truly heal myself. And when I was coming out of those programs, finally graduating from the programs that I was taking, I came out with so much information, I couldn't keep it to myself. I just honestly felt like I had a social responsibility. And it was interesting for me because I never planned on it. Like I said, I planned on going into the programs to gather the information to make myself healthy. And I came out with a desire to help my family and to help, you know, my loved ones and to help other young women and youth. And so I couldn't stop after that. I couldn't hold myself back from sharing it. So I enrolled at the Center for Compassion and Altruism Research and Education at Stanford University School of Medicine. They have an incredible practice there that is a compassion cultivation training program. So I completed that to understand the cognitive, biological, neurological benefits, emotional, psychological benefits of compassion cultivation, of a steady compassion meditation practice. And then I also enrolled in the Institute for Integrated Nutrition, which is an impacted kind of year-long program that teaches you all about integrative health. So we talk about relationship development. We talk about pursuing passion and what your passions really do to affect your mood, your biology. We talk about things like epigenetics. We used to believe that our genes were fixed, and now we understand through the work of epigenetics and more recent studies that our genes react to our environment and the way that we express our genes then change the way that we feel and the ailments that we carry throughout our lives. We also work on things like obvious nutrition, understanding, you know, hundreds of dietary theories. So I've seen people go into the program as vegans and come out as paleo. It's just crazy. So, I mean, and it happens vice versa. So you never know, what works for other people might not work for you. And so the program is truly integrative. You're learning from experts in their fields of psychology, of relationship development, of neuroscience, nutrition dietitians. You're learning about food politics. You're learning about agriculture. There's so much that is to learn there. So I walked out with a plethora of info and I was like, okay, who's ready to listen?
Wow.
Yeah, I couldn't keep it to myself. I felt like I was blessed to heal myself. And so I had to pass it on.
You're on fire. Hey, pass out your social media information if people want to reach out and connect with you. You've got so many great ideas and great solutions and tools to help maybe make some changes and turn a corner in life.
Thank you. So most of my information you'll find on my website. So that is yareli.me. That is www.yareli.me. Or you can, of course, go to my Instagram and there you'll find my link and all of my other links in my bio. So my Instagram is easy. It's just @yareli. So yareli.
You had a great one today. It was a picture of you in the mirror, right? It was like selfie.
Yeah.
Now tell me about that, the significance of that picture.
Yeah. So I don't know if you can see it, but on my spine, I have a very tiny tattoo. So I took that picture of my tiny tattoo on my spine. And that picture was more so to just kind of, for me, a reflection of the strength. The message on my spine is a mantra. And it's all about understanding. The mantra is about understanding that within you lies love, and that you have everything that you need to stand on your own and to move forward. So I put it on my spine to just kind of keep me upright and focused and know where I'm going in life. And
I see it. It's really little. It's like a scar almost.
Yeah, it's tiny. The artist who did it, she did it freehand. She's absolutely brilliant. I believe I linked all of her stuff on my Instagram there as well. But yeah, if you head over to the picture, it's a tiny tattoo on my spine, a beautiful mantra.
You know what? You've inspired me, so I'm going to come clean with all my issues, put that on my Tinder profile.
Okay.
I don't know why I came up with that.
Love it.
You're the best, and give my best to your fiance, and please keep in touch. This was a great visit, and I just can't wait to share the message with a lot of folks.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this platform and having just the opportunity to share what I believe is so important and a part of my purpose here. So thank you. I can't thank you enough for opening your time and heart to me.
You know you're going to tell Strawberry about the whole Tinder line, right?
I am, as soon as he gets home.
Much love to you, girl.
Thank you so much again, Dave. Sending you so much love back.
Thank you so much, Yareli Quintana. The executive producer of the podcast is Hunter Lewis. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. And thank you so much for your positive feedback and comments. It really helps us out as we continue our exponential growth. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll talk to you next time.